Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And you know, it's always a great day when I have our first guest with us because he always brings freshly baked bread with him. Paul Novak back once again. He's an expert baker, baking instructor at Madison College. He authored A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. And today we'll be adding unusual ingredients to bread. And, of course, we'll be taking your bread baking questions as well. So do you have questions about adding different ingredients to your bread? What's your favorite add-in? Or maybe you just have a question about baking bread. I hope you'll join in the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Paul Novak, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
The bread that you brought today is a Durham bread, and it's really good, but it's an unusual color. Talk about this bread.
The color is gray. Mm-hmm. I've never made this bread before. I make a Durham bread, Italian style, but this has grano arso flour. It's also could be called grano tostado. It's wheat, Durham wheat that is burned. The story is that in Puglia, in the south of Italy, after the fields were burned, it was one way that people would get rid of the old stalks and enrich the soil. The poor people would harvest the burnt grains that were left and grind them up into this flour. So it's a hot, let's say, a high ash content.
But it's really tasty.
And it creates an unusual flavor. There's only one cup in the seven cups in the two-loaf batch. So I was not sure of the proportions, so I thought one out of seven would be okay. But, wow, it really colors it and gives it flavor, et cetera.
It's really a pretty color, actually.
It's very unusual. It was odd to work with. It seemed to just incorporate water like crazy, you know, hygroscopic, to be technical, yes. And I did the cool rise method. I did it last night, made it. Did a slow rise of about 10 hours in the refrigerator. Then it rose again in the bannetons, the reed baskets. And then I flipped it over and baked it this morning. So almost still a little bit warm.
Oh, it's really, really quite good. Well, we'll give our listeners a chance to join in. I see we have Michelle online already. But there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Before we take some calls, you haven't been with us for a while because you've been doing a lot of teaching. Tell us about your classes.
Well, I teach bread making classes at Madison College, but I also do fitness classes. We missed Christmas and we missed Easter. So this is actually the first time I've not made a holiday bread.
Well, it's really interesting, and the bread when you have your classes, your bread classes at least. Are you seeing more interest in bread baking, or is it holding steady, or what?
Yeah. If you remember, we've been doing this for 30 years, came out with my book. So there was a time there when it was all about bread machines.
Yeah.
And that sort of faded away. And they have their place. But there's a lot of more people involved with different grains and sourdoughs and sour rye and so, yeah, there's clearly a lot of people new to baking, but there are a lot of people fairly experienced at it.
Well, we'll probably be hearing from some of them. And Michelle in Wisconsin Dells is up with a question. So let's go to Michelle. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I have a question.
And what can we do for you?
I'm one of those bread machine ladies. And I have been trying to move away from prepackaged bread machine mixes and make it from scratch, but my first three loaves have turned into bricks, and I'm wondering where I've gone wrong.
I will have to say I don't have a lot of experience with the bread machines. I do know that the newer ones are way different than the ones from 15 years ago, meaning some will do whole grains and some will not.
What kind of bread were you making?
I have one of those 15-year-old machines, and I was trying to use whole wheat flour.
100%?
Yes.
Okay. My advice would be to go to, you know, try it first at 50-50, then work up to 75% whole wheat, 25% white flour. It's pretty hard to make a completely whole wheat bread even without a machine. So compromising a little bit with nutrition will make it a lot easier to deal with. But again, experiment. Try different proportions. I'm just advising you not to go to 100% whole wheat first.
Yeah, because even, as you say, even in a regular oven.
Yes, it's still more problematic. And the newer machines will say they can handle 100% whole wheat. I'm not sure the older machines could. But I still think it's a good idea to incorporate some white flour into it.
So, Michelle, give that a try and let us know how it turns out.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
If I can say one thing about bread machines, what some people do is let the machine prepare the dough, but then they take it out and bake it in their conventional oven.
Oh.
So that's a whole nother way that some people go. Oh. If you're having a problem with the baking aspect, take advantage of the mixer and bake it in your own oven.
So the mixer does a good job, as far as you know?
Sure.
Yeah, so that's another thing to try, Michelle. In the meantime, as you listen in, give a call with your own question or maybe experience to share with bread baking. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, you have been experimenting with a lot of different ingredients. And why were you inspired to do this? Just curiosity?
Oh, it's something I've always done, meaning I've always used many, many different grains. But there's so many more nowadays. Meaning I've done acorn flour. I'll just warn people, think about an eighth of a cup. It is really powerful. Grapeseed flour is also really, really potent. So the Grano Arso, I was a little concerned that it was doing a cup and not an eighth or a quarter, but it seemingly worked. Part of it was the on Wisconsin Public TV, the British baking shows.
Yeah.
So stem ginger, for example, is a British ingredient. You hardly find it here, but it's very interesting. It's essentially a ball of ginger, sitting in fluid in sugar juice. And you can slice it, and I did that one time, and put it in on a layer in a chocolate cake. So you had this layer of, and it's different than crystallized ginger.
Yeah.
So it's another one that they used was vanilla paste, which you can also find. If you don't want to add any extra liquid, you can use vanilla paste.
Really cool.
Yeah. Muscovado, you used to be able to find. It's a very rich brown sugar, darker than anything available here, and again, quite potent, but a very good taste, but not that molasses, not so much like molasses. So Muscovado sugar, I think, is just wonderful if you can find it.
And, you mentioned the British baking show, which, even though I'm not much of a baker, and I enjoy watching that show. I mean, I think a lot of people may have developed more of an interest in baking just due to that show.
Well, the people that they've had on are just really, really good. Hollywood, I've got one of his books. He's coming from a professional baking background. It was in his family. So he is very good. Mary Berry was really good. The new person is very good. So, yes, whatever you know about baking, there are going to be things to learn there. And when people are experienced and then they're thrown at a challenge, something they've never even heard of, That's, you know, that's fascinating.
Well, let's take, a call here. Lots of callers online. Adam in Deerfield, we'll go to you next. Hi, Adam. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I was just going to make a couple comments. I'll second that British baking show. We actually got the kids, our kids, the kids' British baking show cookbook for Christmas. They love watching the
show.
And they have picked up on that, too. Based on your other previous caller and the bread machine, when I was early on in the bread making, I would add gluten when I was trying to make something very with a lot of whole grain just to add another binding agent to it because that's what I found was kind of breaking down. I just wanted to throw a comment as far as what you were talking about earlier as far as your bread being very gray. I, at one point in time, I just now just kind of throw in whatever I see. If I go in the refrigerator and see something that looks like it needs to get used up, I try to incorporate it into bread, obviously within limits. But we had some elderberry that we had harvested on our property and created it into kind of like a paste, and nothing ever happened with it, and it just dried up. So I reconstituted it and put that in the bread mix, and it really diluted out. What was interesting is when you toasted the bread, it would turn purple. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Oh, that is, that's
like
a good story.
Bread,
I like
but
that.
When you toasted it, it would turn purple. Kind of cool.
Oh, what a great story. Adam, you sound like you are quite the, not a novice when it comes to baking bread.
Watching my mom do it for a lot of years, and now I'm at a point where I have her first recipe that she wrote on a scratch piece of paper, and I bring it out just for good luck. I don't follow anything remotely close to it, but it's just there for luck.
Oh, Adam, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. That was a great story. Denny in Sugar Camp will go to you next. Hi, Denny.
Hi. So here's my question. I've got a sourdough starter that somebody brought back from San Francisco about 20 years ago, and I've been keeping it going. But I have never gotten what I consider a good loaf of sourdough off of it. And I've tried everything, and I just don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, when you talk about sourdough, are you talking about is it as a leavening agent, or is it in terms of the taste?
Well, the taste. I'm not getting a very good leavening in every, you know, sometimes I've even added extra yeast in trying to get it to rise to a nice size. You know, they're still a heavy loaf, but I just don't get that sourdough taste.
Years ago, I did articles for the Isthmus with Jerry Minnick, and we talked about sourdoughs and whatnot. And the Madison sourdough person used to be a real stickler about never using yeast, only using the sourdough as a leavening agent. That's pretty easy to do in a bakery where you're running at high temperatures and you can keep your culture going day after day after day. At the home baker typically puts it in the refrigerator and then brings it out and does it again. So if you had your culture going day after day after day, it would also get more sour. So that's part of it. I tend to put in some yeast, so I compromise the taste a bit. Myself, I don't like it real sour. So
yeah.
So as a leavening agent, that's one thing. As a souring flavor thing, that's something else too. One thing you can do is let it make your batch, and then double it, meaning you'll get feed that and let that go a longer time. Then it will be more sour and it'll be more powerful.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And that's sort of what's happening in a bakery. They never put it in the refrigerator. They just yeah. – that's why the pioneers could do it, make their sourdough pancakes going across the country. They didn't have refrigerators, but they used it every single day.
Ah, there you go. Good luck, Danny. Appreciate the call. Paul Novak, our guest today, baker extraordinaire, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at the world of bread baking today with our guest, Paul Novak. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. And Adam in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Adam.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I
sure
have a
thing.
Comment and a question. My comment is, okay. I love to eat bread all day long. And my question is, do you have a recipe for friendship bread?
Friendship bread.
Friendship bread is the bread that's, it comes from a starter that people pass around. It's really drenched in sugar.
Ah.
And so usually when you get it, somebody gives you the recipe for it. So for me, it's too sweet. Just so you know out there, if you want to take that starter and dilute it, you can actually turn that into sourdough. It's really a sourdough starter with a huge amount of sugar in it for that bread. And it's usually just meant to be used, and it's it. But if you would feed it with flour and water and then use it and then do that again, you'd in a sense dilute the sugar content, and you could perhaps get to.
Could you do it the other way around? If you had the sourdough, could you add sugar and get it?
Yeah, that. But you could, but that's sort of a sin to me. Sorry.
All right, there you go, Adam. Thank you so much, Mike in Lancaster. We'll go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning. A buddy and I are home brewers, and we're always wondering what to do with our spent grains. Have you ever experimented with spent grains in your breads?
Wow, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to say in Madison, one of my favorite breads to buy, I don't buy them very often, is the Origin Bakery, and they have a spent beer grain bread. And so, yeah, you can take those spent grains. They're not, you know, they're going to have less nutrition because some of it's gone into the beer. It's usually used for animal feed, but there's mm-hmm. no reason that couldn't be put into bread. If it's heavily hopped, that might change it.
Yeah.
What I would often do when I made bread in the past, or beer in the past, is I would use some of my yeast in the bread as a flavoring. And of course, the dregs at the bottom after I bottled it, and I would use that in the bread. And of course, that got some hops into the bread too. There's a lot of different cooked grains that you can put in bread. It's one thing I do a lot of. And spent grains from beer, just another possibility.
So is there anything special you'd have to do with the spent grains?
They've already been processed in a sense. So you could cook them if you want. You don't have to, though. So you would just another ingredient. Clearly, it's a lot of, you're adding, in a sense, some liquid besides your grain.
Yeah.
So you'd have to play with the proportions.
Yeah. Mike, does that help out?
Yeah, so you wouldn't have to dry the grains down and then incorporate them in the bread. You could incorporate them in wet.
You could,
right out of a.
Yeah, I mean, I would not have them soaking wet. I'd drain them a bit. But, yes, there's no reason to dry them.
Okay.
You know, some of them have already been roasted anyways, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
That makes
yep.
sense.
Thanks, guys.
There you go, Mike. Thank you. Yeah, appreciate the call. Nancy in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, good morning. I'm calling in response to your first caller who had problems with her bread-making machine. I sent for a recipe book from the Fleischmann Yeast Company a long time ago, and they provide wonderful recipes using whole wheat. One of the ones that I like the best also used not only whole wheat, it called for mashed up black beans from a can. And also a little applesauce. This made the most wonderful, heavy, dense bread. But it wasn't dried out. It was just wonderful. And I also would like to talk about the merits of casserole bread, which is stirred with a spoon instead of being kneaded. And I've used many recipes for that incorporate bits of cut-up cheese and bits of cut up olives. You can put a lot of things in casserole bread. Well, actually, in any bread, you can add things that just give wonderful taste and changes the texture somewhat.
Yeah, Mark Bittman, in some of his books, has a very minimalist breads. And some of them, essentially, you mix them together. You hardly need it. It's really, really wet, and it gives you a, you know, and it, you essentially plop it in and let it rise and bake it. It doesn't go through all the processes. And clearly, putting in olives, putting in cheese, I just put in some old Parmesan the other day. I didn't taste it. It was just a way to use it up.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, those aren't quick breads. They still have yeast, but they're minimally kneaded or mixed. So, yeah, that's a whole other way to go.
Do they rise? I mean, do you get a
loaf?
Yeah,
you would get
a
rise,
like a
but it's not going to – typically you'll have a mixed hole pattern. You know, in other words, small holes, big holes.
Yeah.
So it's really what do you want in a bread? It's again, another way to go.
And, Nancy, that cookbook you got was from Fleischmann?
Yes, yes. It incorporated recipes that appeared on the page to be really weird, but they made wonderful breads.
Well, I encourage weirdness, so.
For sure. Thanks, Nancy. Appreciate it very much. Well, there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. But we have David online from McGregor, Iowa next. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Good. Well, I was wondering, from a show I saw with Michael Pollan, and he was making bread, and he just used flour and water and a little salt, no commercial yeast. And when I tried it, when I have tried it, it didn't work for me, and I was wondering if it's because of the atmosphere where I am, or perhaps, you know, I used 100% whole wheat. Would if I mix some white flour in, would that change things, or what's the, I don't understand.
What was he using as the leavening agent? Was he just having like a slurry sit out?
Right. Yeah, it was room temperature. And he said it depends on where you are, your atmosphere, I think.
Right.
You know, it might take just a few hours, it might take a day and a half, but you'll get a yeast reaction without using commercial yeast, but I didn't.
Right. What he's essentially having you do is create a sourdough by collecting wild yeast and bacteria from the environment. Other people have said get grapes. You know, rinse them, use that water because there's going to be yeast on the grapes or on the apples. Collecting it out of the air is way trickier to do. So to me, it's like make your own sourdough culture and then go from there. By that, I mean buy a culture or get the powdered culture or develop it on your own. And it might take days to get it. And then make your bread.
Yeah. So there's some potential time involved here.
Yeah. Yeah. To make a culture is, again, problematic.
But yeah.
Think about making your culture, and then once you get it going, incorporate that into your bread.
All right. David, does that help?
Yeah, I think so. What about, there are two ways to make sourdough culture, right? You can either do it at room temperature or refrigerate it. Is that correct or not?
Well, I just refrigerate it to slow down the growth. So, no, it would be sitting out at room temperature, and that's where you'd be collecting your wild yeast and bacteria out of the air. And once you get it going, if you want to keep it going, you'd use some and store the mother in the refrigerator and feed it periodically. So, yeah, in a sense, you're just retarding the growth when you cool it in a refrigerator. What I did today with the cool rise method, same idea.
Same idea. Okay. There you go, David. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Open line for you at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Tom emailed to say he's diabetic and looking for a no-carb bread. Does that exist? What's the lowest carb bread you know about?
It might. Well, I'm not. That would be a tough one.
Yeah.
Because part of the reason people eat bread is the protein, yes, but it's mainly the carbohydrates, the starches, the sugars. When you make a sourdough, you're actually converting some of the starches to sugars. So that starch-sugar ratio can be played with in breads. But to do without carbs, I'm not sure how you would do that.
I'm not sure either. And likely somebody who's listening has done it and will call in and tell us how to do it.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to tell people about is I've been experimenting. I make a lot of cooked grains and put those in my breads. So that's why the spent beer idea was not a new one to me. But what I've been playing with lately are all the various, I have to put quotes on it, milks.
Nut milks, for example.
Yeah. So, for example, nut milks, there's almond, cashew, macadamia, hazelnut, walnut. I've used almost all of those. Haven't gotten to walnut yet. Macadamia I thought was very nice tasting. Hazelnut was a bit sweet. Almond was pretty good. To be honest, I'm not sure they're worth doing. I mean, why would you take nuts and do this to them? You know, I don't get it. So it was a way to get a little more richness to bread. But hemp milk was pretty good. Flax milk I thought was a little too strong tasting. But oat milk is the one that makes sense.
Because you're
actually taking a grain and modifying it into a liquid. The nut ones don't make sense to me, you know. Almonds take so much water to grow, and why would you then do the process? But just so you know, if you like these nuts or these grains, it's another possible ingredient in a bread. I wouldn't drink them, but, you know.
There you go. Susie emailed that she uses a Bob's Red Mill Vital Wheat Gluten, quarter cup per large loaf, and 1 to 2 teaspoons of extra water in her bread. It was talking about her bread machine now. So her 100% whole wheat loaves rise beautifully and are soft and fluffy. So, again, she uses Bob's Mill Vital Wheat Gluten, a quarter cup per large loaf, and a couple of tablespoons of extra water.
Yeah, at Willie Street Co-op, they will sell gluten in bulk. I would not myself use it in a whole wheat bread because you've got it really enough gluten there. I use it in breads where I'm putting in amaranth or quinoa or millet, things that don't have gluten, to try to up the gluten content. But if you're gluten intolerant, then you would not want to use that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Richard in Downsville, we will turn to you now. Hi, Richard. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. For the caller that called before regarding sourdoughs, I bake for a farmer's market here, and I'm still learning about sourdoughs, but my experience in the wintertime when I do not use the starter very much is that if I take it out 2 days ahead of time and I feed it a day and then again in the evening and then again in the morning, by the evening of the second day, it's ready to be made into bread, and I get not only a substantial rise but a good rise out of it. And then the question I have for you is exactly the opposite, because the sourdough starter I'm working with seems to be extraordinarily powerful, and I've been using it at the rate of 50% starter to 50% water, and the loaves are blowing out the sides, even after an overnight rise and a 2-hour-plus session in the proof box. And I wonder if you could give me some ratio. I'm now down to 60% water, 40% starter, and I'm about to make another step to like 70-30. And I wonder if you have off the top of your head a percentage that you could offer.
Even though I've baked in a restaurant, I'm still coming from the home cooking, breaking world. So my starter is a cup and a half of flour to a cup of water. But this is a big deal with people. What's the thickness of your sourdough? Some people want it really thick. Some people want it fairly watery. The strength of it is a whole nother thing. So when the person mentioned before about getting their starter from San Francisco, I got mine, 40 years ago from San Francisco, and I've made others since. But it'll become a Wisconsin starter eventually. And that's what you want. You want to have a culture that's stable. So mine's been going for, on and off for 40-some years. But that would mean that if you're out in the country, you're in a different place, you're literally going to have a different starter than somebody else because you've captured different wild yeast and bacteria, different proportions, how you treat it, how you store it, et cetera. So that's why I can't tell you about your sourdough. I can just tell you about mine.
I was thinking back to my San Francisco sourdough that I had for a few years and then went on vacation, and while I was gone, the refrigerator died.
Yes,
so that was the end of everything in the refrigerator.
While we're talking sourdoughs, I should mention you should always give it away to somebody else so you have, in a sense, a backup. Because you are responsible for that culture forever.
Yeah. There you go.
And in terms of strengths, I also have a sour rye culture. And I swear that that has gotten stronger over the years.
Interesting.
It now, even in the winter, doubles, triples way faster than it used to. So, and it's been consistent for who knows how many decades, but it has changed over time. So it's one more thing to notice.
Richard, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Did that answer your question as best we could?
Yes.
Good. Good. Thank you again. Simone in Richland Center, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Simone.
Hello.
And what can we do for you?
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi. I was listening to the program, and I heard him talking about using nut milks. And I wondered if he had ever heard of or used zucchini milk.
No, never heard of that, but I'm not sure what it is. Is this just ground up, soaked zucchini?
Simone?
Yes.
Oh, he must have.
So... zucchini is a common thing to put in bread, some people mix it in with a banana bread. So, yeah, it's a common ingredient in quick breads. No reason why you couldn't incorporate that into a yeast bread.
Yeah, I don't know why not. Yeah.
And the previous caller talked about applesauce. I use applesauce a lot of times as a substitute for oil. And prune puree, Levkar, there's... The more ingredients that add binder to the bread and maybe substitute for oil.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Simone. Ruth Ann emailed wondering if you have a good pizza dough recipe. Do you have suggestions for flour and so forth?
One of the best bakers in the world to me is Alice Waters, who had Chez Panisse in the Berkeley area. When we were doing our restaurants in the early 70s, she had started the local movement. I mean, we were doing that too, before L'Etoile, et cetera. But anyways, in one of her cookbooks, she has a very good pizza dough recipe, and that is actually the one I still use. And an interesting thing is that there's a small amount of rye flour in it. But I sometimes will put durum flour in, meaning it's 2 cups and 1/4 is rye in her recipe, or I use sometimes cornmeal or durum flour. And so I'm not sure which of her cookbooks it's in. But anyways, Alice Waters, definitely somebody to look into.
I bet you if you went online and put in Alice Waters pizza dough.
Yes. And it's one of her earlier books, yeah.
Yeah, there we go with that. And Grant emailed to ask if you ever use fresh brewer's yeast instead of using traditional baker's yeast.
Well, if you use, yeah, if you would use, you know, the baking, brewing yeast that you would use for making beer, it's similar to the baking yeast. You know, it's a different variety. I think it's probably the same genus and species. When somebody else talked about spent grains, if you're using your spent yeast, that's probably not got a lot of leavening agent to it. So, but you have to be careful if you use that. If you use that yeast, for example, and realize brewer's yeast is denatured, meaning it's just a nutritional ingredient, has no leavening agent to it. But fresh beer yeast, yeah, either out of the packet or liquid or the dregs from your batch. Yeah.
There you go. Well, John in Oshkosh emailed to say a good low-carb bread, this goes back to an earlier caller, he recommends Ezekiel from Food for Life Baking in California. There's 15 grams of carbs in probably in a slice, I would guess.
And I'm sometimes people use Jerusalem artichoke flour because it's used differently by diabetics. But the caller before asked for a no carb one.
Yeah.
Yes, low carb. Yes, you can find those that put in fillers, in a sense. But remember, way in the past, people, to make their bread look white, used chalk. So if you want a lot of calcium carbonate.
Well, and chestnut flour.
Yeah, it's another Italian ingredient. You have to be careful with it. You might want only a quarter cup. It is strong. And one other ingredient I wanted to mention, in terms of sugars, in the U.S., we tend to use cane sugar, but sometimes you'll see a bag that's granulated and it doesn't say cane. It's probably beet sugar.
Oh.
For some reason, that's not as good, but in Germany, you can get beet sugar syrup, Grafschafter. The British use golden syrup, which is cane sugar syrup. You know, corn syrup's an abomination, sorry. There are all these other possibilities.
Lots of other ways to skin the cat or to bake that bread.
And the newest bread. One I know of is algae oil.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that's possible, but algae oil. Okay.
On the LG oil note, we're finished, Paul. Thank you so much. Well, you'll come back and be with us again sooner than later.
Yeah, we didn't even get through this whole list of
unusual,
innovative ingredients. Yes.
We'll get to it next time you're here. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
Paul Novak, baking instructor at Madison College, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. Oh, it's great to have him with us, and we'll look forward to his next visit. We are going to turn our attention to solar energy next with our guest from the Wisconsin Energy Institute. So stay with us as we talk about less expensive solar energy. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.